Before we begin, I would like to promote our new Patreon, patreon.com/bitterbrownfems, where you can go and support this podcast by donating anywhere between $1 and $15 a month in exchange for a reward. There's no too little a donation. We appreciate every bit we get. And check out more info at patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. Now let's start the show.
We'll do it live. Okay. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. Fucking thing sucks.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Bitter Brown Femmes. This is your host, Cassandra. You might know me as @Chiganisma.
Online.
Online. That's why I say @Chiganisma, yeah. Okay?
So you don't get your ass sued. and this is Ruben, but you might know me as Queer Chicano Chisme.
All right. So first and foremost, we wanted to start this episode off with telling a lot of our followers to stop fucking tagging us in this fucking Instagram account of this white woman profiting off of Mexican culture. You all know what we're talking about because I've seen it retweeted on Twitter and on Instagram like nonstop for the last 2 days. It's called like
Mexi-trend or something like that. Yeah.
And for those that don't know, so there's this Instagram account of it's called Mexi-trend, and if you go on it, it's like I'm assuming a white woman selling Mexican attire, Mexican dresses, Mexican blankets. And all the people, like all the models modeling the clothes are white women and white babies. So,
and before anybody jumps in, like, no, she's not a white Latina. She's like a gringa TM, right? White.
Like, from the U.S. goes to Mexico to buy these and then comes back and sells them to other white women on her shop. And of course, it's cultural appropriation. And of course, she's exploiting actual Mexican people who sell these things. But we actually talked about this a little on our talk. So me and Ruben actually just did a talk this past week at UC Davis. Thank you for everyone that went out.
It was such a good talk.
Yeah, shout out to everyone that went out. But I had mentioned that one of the things that I don't really invest a lot of energy in anymore is culture appropriation. And it is not because I don't care about it or because I think it's okay. I just feel like I want to spend my energy on other topics. I just feel like everyone jumps on everyone for doing cultural appropriation like 24/7 that now I just like roll my eyes or I'm like, this bitch. But I'm not going to spend like 10 posts on Chiganisma telling this woman what everyone else has already told her in a damn comment. Because at the end of the day, she's not going to fucking, like, take it down. She's not going to be like, oh, okay, I understand.
And, like, these white women know, right? Like, it's not like, this is like, oh, my God, cultural appropriation. This is, like, something I've never heard of before. And it's like, no, bitch, we spent, like, all of, like, 2014, 2015, like, dealing with the shit on the daily, right? Like, it was, like, us, like, investing all this fucking energy into, like, educating white people on, like, why you shouldn't wear dreads, why you shouldn't, like, you know, wear, like, X and Y thing, right? Why you shouldn't, like, you know, paint, like, do the fucking Dia de los Muertos face painting shit. Like, we've been here a million times. And they know better. It's just, like, they don't want to do better. And so at this point, it's just, like, it's time for, like, gringos to, like, collect their own people, right? I'm not going to spend my time on white people because I'm not invested in whiteness. I'm not invested in white people. Like, if white people want to do better, they're going to, or be better, they're going to do better themselves. They're not going to, like, profit off of, like, my fucking labor, right? And so for me, my labor is for my people, right? And that's, and for QTPOC, primarily, right? Not for some gringa that's just, like, going to become a better person and then go on and, you know, profit off that, right? Profit off what they've learned from me, right?
I don't know. I mean, if you want to do that, like, go ahead and do that, right? But
we're also, like, not demonizing people.
Yeah, if you want to spend your energy and invest in that and call them out or whatever the case may be, like, if that's what you want to do, go ahead and do it. But me, personally, I'm fucking over it. I'm fucking over calling, like, all these white, if I just sat there and called out all these white people and cultural appropriation, like, that's all I would be doing every single day because there's so many of them.
Literally, yeah. And I want to do other things, like...
Yeah, we want to talk about... Because I feel... And I also feel like cultural appropriation is a very... I don't want to say easy. I don't know if that's the right word to, like, talk about and call out and point out. Like, we all know, like, what it is and what it looks like. But when we want to talk about other topics that usually aren't talked about, like, no one wants to invest energy on those things mm-hmm. because they don't want to check themselves. So it's easier to just call out other people who are appropriating other cultures. Include especially our culture too, right? And that's one thing I mentioned at the talk, that when I was invested in calling white people out on cultural appropriation, it also came from a very nationalist perspective on my end, because that's when I was on my Aztlan bullshit. So I was like, you're not Mexican, you can't do this, how dare you? And so I felt like it was actually also more tied to like nationalism, like this belongs to me and this is mine. And so that's also why now I'm like, just I, you know, just yeah, shut it off.
Because there's, like, no discussions, right, about, like, you know, how certain, like, ropa típica and, like, things like that, like, belong to indigenous peoples, right? Mm-hmm. And then the process of, like, mestizaje and nationalism, they became a national symbol, right, that are now so far removed, right, that people forget who originally created these things, right? So if we want to talk about cultural appropriation, then, like, I think more effective discussions might, you know... be things that revolve around nationalism, mestizaje, anti-indigeneity, anti-blackness, right? As they pertain to these clothing, right? And so I think for me, when it comes to cultural appropriation, I would rather have discussions with my own peoples than with white people.
Yeah, and culture, if we want to talk about cultural appropriation, there's so many other things to talk about that's just not calling out white people. Like Ruben mentioned, for example, no one wants to talk about Frida Kahlo's appropriation of indigenous peoples in Mexico, you know? No one wants to talk about that. And even with these dresses, right? Like Mexican culture took indigenous culture and made it its own for everybody, including white Mexicans. And it's also, yeah, like, for example, those dresses, like, I have shirts like that, right? Like, I've worn dresses like that. And I've also, like, after reading a lot about the appropriation, that you can still be Chicanx and Mexican and still appropriate Mexican culture. And so it's also, like, thinking about that too, right? So,
yeah,
those are the discussions we want to have. We don't want to have just, like, call-out post of, like, white Americans selling Mexican things like they always fucking do.
Yeah.
I mean, if I saw them on the street, I feel like that would be a different conversation. Like, I'd be like, what the fuck are you doing, right? If I wanted to. But online, I'm just like, I don't have energy for that.
If I saw them on the street, like, it's time to throw down.
Yeah, exactly. To steal everything and take off with
it. TBH, I'm just like, that belongs to my people. Thanks.
Okay. Exactly. And speaking of white Mexicans, so let's talk. I wanted to talk a little bit about Francisco Cantú. Is that? Yeah, Francisco Cantú. And can you tell us a little about him, Ruben?
Yeah. So Francisco Cantú is a former Border Patrol agent, right? So he's ICE, who quit his job as a Border Patrol agent and started writing poetry, right? And he writes poetry about how, like, you know, how beautiful the struggle of the Border Patrol agent is, right? And how, you know, how there was so much, like, you know, romantic tragedy in that job, right? And he's really humanizing, like, Border Patrol agents, right? Who, like, and he's, like, quote-unquote Latino, right? Which something that people don't talk about, too, is that, like, he didn't start identifying as Latino until he saw that, like, it would open up spaces for him, right? Because something that about Latinidad is that it benefits white Latinx the most, right? Because it makes them, like, exotic in a way that still... it exoticizes them in a way that still doesn't make them a threat to white people, right? Who are not ethnic, right? And so... he's writing this book, and for the most part, I ignored him until, like, other Latinxes started, like, praising him, right? And they were like, wow, a Latino finally made it in publishing and blah, 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 right? And I'm just like, what? Like, this is one of the big reasons I fucking hate discussions about representation is because they never go more than, like, skin deep, right? It's never, like, we're gonna, you know, dismantle X and Y, right? It's always, like, we got, you know, visibility in a system of oppression, right? And so, to some people, like, that looks like liberation. But to me, there is nothing about an ICE agent making it in mainstream, like, publishing that signals liberation for me or the people that I'm trying to be allies to, right? If anything, he's a tool now of oppression, even more so than when he, even, maybe even more so than when he was an ICE agent, because now he's humanizing them, right? And so when I saw that certain Latinxes who have a lot of influence in our communities, right, that were praising him, I was just so shocked. Because I wrote a thread about it, and I was like, how many beautiful words does Francisco Cantú have to write to bring back all the undocumented lives that he destroyed? Right.
Yeah. Thank you for that, for breaking that down. And I just, when I first saw Francisco Cantú being shared, it was through a page called Defend Our Hoods. So they're a group in Austin doing a lot of anti-gentrification work. So they were the first people that I saw call him out. Cause I guess he was doing a book tour, or he is doing a book tour, but one of his stops was in Austin. And so there were some people that showed up to protest against him being there. And when you had mentioned, when we were talking about this, and you had mentioned that there was, some Latinx people online that were defending it, I was like, kind of in shock, but at the same time, I'm also not, because we talk about the flaws of representation a lot and how it fucks us up, right? But I'm also, at the same time, I still am shocked because it's a fucking ex-Border Patrol agent. It's not, first of all, he's an ex-Border Patrol agent, and he's also a white Latino. Like, if you look at him, he looks kind of like a hipster, like a white hipster.
He had the gentrifier look down to a T.
And so when I first saw the picture, I was like, this person? Like, that's not someone that I would imagine to be in Border Patrol. Not that that matters, right? But I also think that the way he looks also gets, is getting him a lot of attention, a lot of praise, because he's like this young, good-looking, white hipster guy talking about, like, his experience in Border Patrol and how he regrets it. But even though he says he regrets it, because there was, like, a tweet from him that said, "To be clear, during my years as a Border Patrol agent, I was complicit in perpetuating institutional violence and flawed, deadly policy. My book is about acknowledging that. It's about thinking through the ways we normalize violence and dehumanize migrants as individuals and as society." But at the same time, within that book, there's a quote that says, "The people in the Border Patrol do really amazing humanitarian things." So it's like, which is it? How can you say that you're writing this book to talk about the problems of Border Patrol, which is violence, imperialism, murder, rape, etc., and at the same time say that Border Patrol does really amazing humanitarian things? Because what are those humanitarian things? Like, it's like the same when people say that cops do good things, and you can't have one or the other, because as an institution itself, it's not possible for you to do good things being a Border Patrol agent, being an ICE agent, being a police officer. There's, like, no way.
Yeah, and let's get something very, like, clear, right? When you become a tool of the state, when you become a cop, when you become an ICE agent, that's you buying into and being a part of a murderous system, right? You know, a life-ruining system, you know, a system of imperialism, right? And so, to me, then the question comes is, like, okay, if these people are such humanitarians, it's just like, they're also part of a murderous system. So how, if we look at this on a plain terms level, how many good things does a murderer have to do, right, to all of a sudden absolve them from the violence that they've inflicted, right? And I don't think there's anything good that they can really do. Like, it really fucking isn't. They're fucking terrorists. ICE agents terrorize lives.
Yes, and so he got a $100,000 book deal.
Oh my God!
Yes. From I guess the publishing is called Penguin Books.
The what? Penguin Books, bitch? That is like the publishing house.
Mm-hmm. Which speaks even more to what this person and their book means and what it symbolizes to a lot of people, especially liberals, because I feel it's also, when we talk about liberals, it's like they're complicit in these things, but they have this, they're trying to be painted as these saviors or these people that are doing good things and like they deserve cookies for doing like the basic things, when even at the same time, they're really not doing that. And so for me, it's, he's like saying on Twitter or whatever that he wants, or like he wrote this book and he's out there because he wants people to know what the Border Patrol, like the awful things that Border Patrol does. And how are you doing that by having a $100,000 book deal, which is one, taking up space, and like your book is unnecessary pretty much because we can all tell you these things. Like, we don't have to be in Border Patrol to know that you're shit. There's actual people who have been affected by Border Patrol, immigrants, undocumented people who have been harassed, who have been killed by Border Patrol agents that can speak on this themselves, that they deserve book deals. They deserve.
I was about to say, yes. Yeah. How many undocumented poets do not have a publishing deal because this motherfucker has one? Right? How many undocumented poets has he, like, uplifted? And how many undocumented poets have the same, are the same Latinxes that are uplifting Francisco Cantú? How many have they put on? And I'm just really weary of that. Like, I'm so tired of their bullshit. I'm tired of this, like, one of us made it, so we all made it. It's like, no, like, that is not me. Like, Francisco Cantú is not my representation. So how does them getting a book deal help anyone else? If anything, it makes it so that anything that contradicts him is seen as othered, is seen as bad, right? Because he's had white approval. He's now getting liberal approval. And he's also getting, like, white nationalist approval, right? Because mm-hmm. I remember you brought up that, like, Defender Hoods also mentioned that, like, in all his book readings, there's, like, a white nationalist, like, support.
Trump supporters, too, right? And so if he's genuinely saying, you know what, I was in Border Patrol, and now I realize that this work is violent, this work is dehumanizing, I don't want to be a part of it. There are ways that you can, I don't want to say, what's the word? That you can actually do to make, I don't want to say make it better, but that you can be like, hey, I fucked up, like, this is what it is, I left Border Patrol, but now how can I help undocumented people? How can I help my, like, immigrants? And, like, one of those ways is, like, you can actually go into the community and help those people in whatever capacity they need. You can join orgs. You know, there's an org in Arizona. I think it's in either Phoenix or Tucson, or maybe both. I forgot what their name is called, but they go out and they put out water for people in the desert who are crossing, who usually, you know, it's fucking hot. It's fucking hot in Arizona. So, I mean, that's like a very minimal thing you can do. But he can go and join those orgs. He can give money, right? I want to know how much money he's giving from everything that he's making, if he's even donating this money, which still doesn't make it okay, but are you even giving back to those communities? So I don't understand how we are supposed to praise someone like this.
Yeah, and $100,000 from his book deal, that's still, if he donated all of that to undocumented org, that would still be too little for the violence that he's caused, right? So how much more work can he put in, right? How can he, and for me, it's just like, this book and this tour, right? And him, like, doing like a mi culpa, right, tour, that doesn't do anything to help undocumented people.
No, it further humanizes Border Patrol agents. And then people think that all Border Patrol agents have this view that he has, that they regret it or that they're trying to be better. And they don't. And so, yeah, we just wanted to highlight this person because I think it's really important. And if you weren't familiar with the story, you can Google his name, Francisco Cantú. You can look him up on Twitter. You can also follow Defend Our Hoods on Facebook.
Yeah, and it's just, like, frustrating, especially when people, Latinxes, were called out and Chicanxes were called out for, like, uplifting a story. They resorted to, like, how dare you call us out for supporting a Latino, a Latinx, right? Because we rarely get published. And for me, it's just like, I really don't give a fuck if we rarely get published, if this is the kind of shit that happens, right? And also, like, in their efforts to absolve themselves from their guilt and their role in uplifting this violence, they throw away a very useful tool in social justice, right? The call out, right? And a lot of people are like, call outs are bad, and they never lead to anything. They just, like, you know, they just want to dispose people. And I'm not saying that call outs haven't been used to, in a negative way, but that's not their intention. Like, that shouldn't be their intention, right? The intention for a call out is always rooted in, like, investment in the betterment of the person you're calling out, right? Sure, they often are misused because, you know, people who want to misuse tools, who want to be violent, will always find a way to corrupt tools, right? That doesn't mean that we have to throw the whole tool away, right? And so for me, it was chicken shit when people who were being called out for, not only for this, but for other issues, right? They want to resort to the call out is bad, right? The call out is a toxic social justice tool. And it's just like, nah, bitch, you're toxic, not the tool.
So we have been talking about call outs a lot. I know, like, the last three episodes, we've at least mentioned it. And so we're going to keep talking about it until, I don't know, forever. I know a couple episodes ago, we talked about representation and call outs. I think it was about Coco. But anyway, speaking of Coco, did you see the Oscars, Ruben?
I did not. I've been, like, really disinterested in, like, the award season. And I'm really, usually, like, really invested. Like, I usually, like, try to watch every, like, Oscar-nominated film and every, like, Grammy-nominated album. But, like, in the last year, I think I've just been, like, really disinvested from that. I think it was after, like, Lemonade lost that I was just like, nothing matters. Right.
I feel like there's been, an award show every time we record.
Well,
at least
always,
there's, like, the Golden Globes, and then the like, there's been, like, a damn award show every time. But the most recent one was the Oscars. I believe that was, like, a week ago.
Yeah.
A week ago. Oh, yeah. And that's when I was actually in Oakland with Ruben, so we didn't watch it. But,
no, we were just...
yeah. But we did see, obviously, some highlights and what some of the stuff that went down, and Coco won Best Animated Film, so all the Mexicans were happy. And so Coco won.
And it's something interesting that you brought up, is that, like, in the acceptance speech, it was, like, white folks that went up to the mic.
Yeah, so I googled it on YouTube. I just googled, like, when Coco won, because I wanted to see, you know, what was said. And I'm assuming it was a director, the writer, the producer. It was a white woman, a white man. And no, one of them was Latinx, though. They did say they were Latinx. But anyway, they were the three that spoke and said thank yous. And they did talk about representation and how they try to honor Mexican culture in their acceptance speech. And then... Gael Garcia was up there. He didn't speak, though. And, it was just interesting. I don't know what I was expecting, but it was interesting when they went up there, and I was like, who are these white people?
Yeah. For me, it was just like, I didn't honestly expect them to talk, but I wasn't surprised.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, who's profiting from Coco?
Exactly.
Right? It ain't fucking Mexicans. It ain't brown people. It ain't black people. It's fucking white people, right? They're the ones profiting off our culture, right? And they're the ones who are selling the merch. They're the ones who from now on, Dia de los Muertos, they will start selling Coco merch. And they will be making millions of dollars off of it. Not Mexico. Not the indigenous people whose, you know, traditions they, you know, use to make this film, right? And so, to me, it was just like... I was okay with them talking because it represented what this empty representation really entails for Latinxes and Chicanxes.
Yes.
And so I was actually
You're
pleasantly surprised. Yeah, I am, because people don't see that. People see, like, you know, you know, Guillermo del Toro winning, and they see Coco winning, and they see Jane the Virgin winning, right? But mm-hmm. who's in that cast, and who produces, and who owns it, and who does X and Y? And it's white people, mm-hmm. right? And I'm just, like, not here for that. Like,
yeah. And so I think people were probably like, oh, at least they're acknowledging that it's representation, or they're, I think they were like, thanks to the people of Mexico for the culture or something. But at the same time, even though, yes, I'm glad that that was a visual for everyone to like actually see that, I was also wondering why they didn't give the mic, which I know why they didn't, right? Because, you know, I mean, why would they? But I was kind of wondering, like, are they going to give the mic to like Gael Garcia or to Anthony Gonzalez, who voiced Miguel's voice in Coco? And at the very end, the only thing that Anthony Gonzalez was able to say was Viva Mexico. And then it, like, that was it. They walked off the stage. And I also thought that was very interesting because Anthony Gonzalez
the is kid's Guatemalan.
Yeah, he's Guatemalan. His parents are Guatemalan. So that has also been another conversation of, you know, even though that he voiced Coco and he was a part of this film, which is, again, Mexico, Mexican nationalism, he is Guatemalan. And even though I'm sure he, you know, appreciates Mexican culture, like he probably doesn't fully understand that, that at the end of the day, he is Guatemalan, right? And that a lot of people online I've seen have tried to erase that from him. So, like, I don't know what page it was, someone, when they said, you know, that Anthony Gonzalez had said Viva Mexico, someone had said that he's Mexican. Oh, like, yeah, like when people like give cookies, like, oh, you're Mexican now because you did this. And so I feel like they were doing that with him, but like erasing the fact that he's Guatemalan.
Yeah. And it's like how like Mexican nationalism works in very like subtle ways, right? And so a lot of Central Americans were like, you know, they're erasing this person. And in the process of not only like this, but like the movie in general, it erased the fact that like it is, first of all, like, because Dia de los Muertos is not a Mexican holiday, it is an indigenous tradition and practice that has been co-opted by the Mexican state, right? If people, what's that word? People connect Dia de los Muertos to Mexico, when in fact, because it's an indigenous holiday and the indigenous people live, you know, throughout Latin America, right? It's something that is celebrated in Guatemala, in Salvador, and even the Philippines, right? Mm-hmm. It's just celebrated everywhere. But this film does a lot to erase that.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, there was no mention of it to even say, yes, it's set in Mexico, but also it's not just Mexico, other people celebrated. Like, yeah. Not even just throwing that in there. Yeah. So Coco won, and also, Guillermo del Toro won a lot of awards that night as well.
Yes, and for the fish fucking movie. Yes.
Yes, I have not seen it.
Oh, bitch, you should have to just see it. It's bomb. Like, this girl fucks a fish, like, straight up.
I heard,
like,
yeah. Very
it's kind of,
interesting.
It's kind of amazing. It's kind of amazing.
I'm
but we never see fish penis, is the thing. Okay, it's just like.
Right. I've seen. No, I'm just kidding.
but. Was Shape of Water, it was a very, have you seen Amelie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was like an Amelie, but it was like a deaf person, and there was magical things in it. It was really violent, but I love the film. But one thing I didn't really think about until somebody unpacked it for me later, is that like, it was all white people. And it was like this Mexican who's being uplifted of like, oh, the face of diversity. And I was like, wait, Guillermo del Toro's also white. He's a white Mexican, right? It's a white Mexican, like, dealing with just white people bullshit. And like, only casting white people in the shit, right? So what does that actually do for like representation, TM, right?
Mm-hmm. Which also reminds me that I did share an article titled "The Oscars Love Movies About Disability, Not Disabled Actors," and it unpacks how in every movie, usually every movie we see that has a disabled character, they are not played by disabled people. And so, for instance, this woman, I don't know the actress's name, I don't think I've ever seen her in another film, but she does play a deaf woman, and she's not deaf. And so that would have been also a moment to cast an actual deaf person.
Right, because it's like there are disabled actors, mm-hmm. and they don't get cast, right? And so how much do you actually care about disabled people when you don't uplift them, right? When you don't pay them for the narratives you're trying to tell. Also, like, people were like, oh, yeah, Guillermo del Toro representation, brown people winning. And I'm just like, wait, where is Guillermo del Toro brown? Like, where?
Yeah.
Is he wearing, like, really, like, bright He's powder? So white. Like, what the?
He's right. So sorry. Like, you wouldn't, if you saw Guillermo del Toro anywhere on the street, you wouldn't be like, look at this Mexican man, right? And that's, yes, that's erasing that white Mexicans exist, but that's to say that he passes, or he is white, and he goes through the world white. As a white man.
Yeah, it's like, he looks like a fucking, he's just a Spanish-speaking Michael Moore.
Yes, like, I was about to say he looks like Michael Moore.
Like, so much like Michael Moore! And I'm just like, if I saw them on the street, I wouldn't know. It's like, fuck, I know that's someone famous, but is that Michael Moore? Is that Guillermo del Toro? Let me talk Spanish to them and see what they respond with.
Exactly. And so it does really come down to something that people just don't seem to understand or don't want to understand, is that being Mexican does not equal brown. Right?
Yeah.
And so there was an article that I shared, and I think you shared it too.
I did.
Titled, Being Mexican Does Not Automatically Equal Being Brown.
Yeah, by Ariana.
Yes. And you can follow her. Her Instagram name is, and I tagged her in the post on Chicanisma, but she's also on Twitter.
Ariana the Poet.
It's the same? Okay. Ariana the Poet. Yeah. And she's awesome, and everyone should follow her.
Yeah, I was lucky to see her perform, and she's written such, she's always talking about, like, what it means to be, you know, black and like, Mexican, right? And one of the most beautiful poems that I've heard her write about is, like, how cumbia is, like, rooted in, like, blackness. And even the way we dance it, like, recalls slavery in Latin America, actually. Right? So, because we don't move our feet, like, we don't lift our feet too much right off the floor, it recalls how enslaved people were chained, but they still try to find joy, right? And how they learned, they invented dances that took chains into consideration, right? And so Ariana the Poet, this is just like one of many of her great works. And I think it was such an important conversation that people are not ready for. And unfortunately, which sucks because she got a lot of harassment for it. And every time people try to post it about it, they also got a lot of pushback, right? So for me, it was like, what was it? Oh, people were like, oh, you know, how dare you? People were just trying to make this simple term of, like, not every Mexican or not every Latinx person is brown into this discussion or this, like, projection of them being like, well, I'm a white Latino and I'm a white Mexican and I have suffered. And it's like,
cool. Okay, cool. Yeah. Let's move on.
Yeah.
And it's also, like, I shared the post on Chicanisma, and I tagged her in it. Like, I had to ask her beforehand, is it okay if I tag you? Because I knew if her shit was public or if she's on Twitter that she was going to receive backlash. Like, I don't mind if people comment on Chicanisma. I'm like, whatever. But I didn't want her to receive backlash. But I'm sure that she did, right? Currently, like, on this post, for example, I have, like, 176 comments, and I cannot obviously reply to all of them. And also, when you are just crying white Latinx tears, like, there's not much for me to say. I'm not going to console you, and I'm not going to repeat the same thing that was already stated in this fucking piece, right? but yeah, there are a lot of, you know, the whole, yeah, like, okay, so let's break it down. So, when people use the term brown to mean, to equal all Latinx, this particular piece is specifically about talking Mexicans. About Mexicans, right? But it also applies to all Latinx. But the reason that we're talking about Mexicans is because that is what, like, well, Ariana, she's Afro-Mexican, she's a black Mexican, right? And so...
And also, like, the way that we got into this conversation is that Guillermo del Toro is a white Mexican.
Yeah.
Right? But you would try to paint him as brown, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because someone in the comments, like, why is it Mexican? Like, why is it specific to Mexicans? And I'm just like, also because there's history. There's a lot of history that she gave in this piece that was tied to Mexico, right? So yes, this whole thing is specifically about Mexico and the history of Mexico, and also the history of the Brown Berets and the Chicano movement, which is very Mexican specific. But yes, it can also apply to all Latinx, right? Because when we say brown people, brown folks, a lot of people, to them, it equals all Latinx or all Mexicans. And that is not the case. When you're using Black folks, when you're using brown folks, that means only those, like,
people who are racialized as one or the other.
People who are racialized one or the other. So I can't say, oh, the brown community. And what I'm actually saying is, what I'm trying to say is the Latinx community. So by saying the brown community, I'm erasing Black Latinx. I'm erasing white Latinx, which I don't care if I erase them, to be honest, but you are erasing, you are erasing Black Latinx and their experiences.
And also indigenous people,
and co-opting, indigenous
Latinxes, who don't exist within this binary of like Black, white, right? Or in brownness, indigenous people are like a different, like, because it's not about skin or blood quantum, it's about community ties, right? So that doesn't apply, right?
And when people also say brown, they also mean indigenous. So the reason people say brown is because they're like, oh, well, we're all indigenous, right? That all Mexicans, all Latinx have some indigenous or are indigenous. And that is not true, because again, we go back to, there are white fucking Latinx Mexicans that are descendants of colonizers that have been there. Like, how the fuck are they indigenous? I'm not indigenous. Yeah. I'm brown. I'm not indigenous, though. And I'm not... That, so, words?
Yeah, and I always bring up, like, my favorite person to bring up is Belinda. Mm-hmm. Because she's Mexican. She is a Mexican national. Mm-hmm. But she's not indigenous. She literally just moved from Spain. Mm-hmm. Her parents moved from Spain at a young age. And she got Mexican, she became a Mexican national. And now performs, and she's like the Britney Spears of Mexico, right? She performs a lot of Mexican songs and mariachi sometimes in her concerts and all that. And don't get it twisted. Like, I love pop, and in her early career, like, I was about it. But at the same time, when you say, like, all Mexicans are indigenous, you're letting her into indigeneity. People like her and people who share her identity, right? Into an identity that isn't ours to own, right? I like to bring up the fact that, like, my great-grandmother was Nahua, right? Like, that's as close, my father's side, like, I don't know much about it. Because there's a shame, right? In indigeneity, that it's weird to talk about in U.S. context, because in Mexican context, when you live in Mexico, and that's something that people in Mexico talk to me about, I have a lot of people who live in Mexico still, who I'm, like, friends with, thanks to the internet, who are like, this whole like claiming indigeneity thing is a very US like Chicanx thing, right? Because in Mexico, the lines are clearly drawn, right? We're mestizo. We fucking, like, one of the biggest examples is like the earthquake that happened last year. Who got the most help, right? And it was like the city, right? The EFE, and where a bunch of mestizos live. And who got the least help? Like, not only that earthquake, but there's been multiple earthquakes since, right? And there's been multiple issues since, right? Oaxaca never gets help. And that's because it's, like, one of the most indigenous, like, states in Mexico, right? And where my peoples are from, Puebla, right? People don't really get attention there either. My family had to wait weeks after the earthquake to get any relief. And so it's this discussion, right, when we paint, like, a very broad brush on, like, you know, indigeneity and brownness, we're erasing and we're giving a pass to people who benefit from whiteness, people who benefit from mestizaje, right? And that includes people like Guillermo del Toro, right? And Francisco Cantú, right? Where they can use Latinidad and Mexicanness in order to, like, elevate their art in ways that people who actually are oppressed by these identities, right?
Yeah, like Frida Kahlo. So... Frida.
So you're gonna bring that discussion.
I am. Okay. So Frida Kahlo was a white Mexican woman. A lot of people are gonna be upset about that, and are upset whenever that is discussed. But she used indigenous culture, indigenous wardrobe, to uplift herself as an artist. Whereas if an actual indigenous woman, an actual indigenous person in Mexico had done that, they wouldn't have gotten any claim.
Yeah. And something that people forget and people ignore is that, like, Frida was actually paid by the state to paint a national identity, right? So her, Diego Rivera, and a bunch of other artists were told by the Mexican government, right? Because she was born, she likes to say that she was born the day of the Mexican Revolution, of Mexican independence, but that's not true. Mm-hmm. Mexican Revolution. But she lived through a period of unrest in Mexico where people were like, the Mexican Revolution happened and I don't like the way the government is handling things. And the Mexican identity wasn't drawn out really well. People were still asking, what does it mean to be Mexican? And the Mexican government at the time was like, okay, we're going to give people an identity. We're going to give people an idea of what a Mexican is. And one of the biggest things that people forget about culture is that, like, culture is very much rooted in traditions and culture and art, right? So they created all these things, right? And so Frida Kahlo went from being, like, a rich person of German descent, right? So she her family was German, right? And I actually found out, I went to a museum when I was speaking at, in Boston, and I went to the museum, and it had early papers that she had written, mm-hmm. and early things. And did you want to know what her real name was? It was Freuda.
What?
Freuda.
Freuda?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So she removed the E from her name to make it more like Mexican or more like legible in Spanish. Right? And so that was part of her thing to, like, make herself, like, more Mexican and more indigenous, quote-unquote. Because one thing that the polemicist, he's a educator and writer on Twitter, talks about is that, like, the reason that people accepted Frida so much is because her body was one that was, even though she was disabled, right? I'm not, erasing her disability, but even though she was disabled, she was still white, right? And so it was easy to accept indigeneity when it comes through a white body that didn't face the oppressions that indigenous people face, right? And so that also reminds me that, like, there was a Frida doll that was, like, promoted by Barbie, mm-hmm. right? And so when people were like, Frida would never want her image, like, exploited and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, y'all don't know shit about Frida. Like, she was a communist, quote unquote, right? But at the end of the day, she was a fucking tool of the state who got paid countless money to promote an idea of what Mexicans look like. And I know I'm talking a lot of shit, but I met a Frida expert, Babelito. Some of you might know him from his podcast, Latinos Who Lunch. And I had a very beautiful meeting with them one time. And they were like, you talk a lot of shit about Frida. And I'm like, fuck, I'm sorry. Like, but they were like, no, that's good. Because you cannot love Frida without hating Frida. And I know you love Frida. And to me, like, I felt really seen because as a queer disabled person, like, of Mexican descent, like, I love the shit out of Frida. But because I love her, like, I want to critique her. And I want to hold her in her totality.
That's real. Yeah, and when we critique Frida, when we critique anyone, that's also not to say that you're not allowed to enjoy them. Like, we're not saying, like, fuck Frida, and if you like her, you're this or you're that, and you can't enjoy her art, or she wasn't a good artist, or not, and especially that we're not erasing that she was a queer, disabled, awesome woman who, like, did challenge gender norms, that was all of these things, but at the same time, she can be problematic, and she did appropriate indigenous culture, and she did, you know, so she can be all of these things at one time, and we're not trying to erase those things. We're just trying to point these out to have bigger conversations of what we're seeing today, right? Because this was years ago, but we're still having these conversations right now because no one wants to critique people, especially if it's artists, especially if it's people that you admire and you hold to the standard. And one of those people is currently Gina Rodriguez, so.
And you did not just connect Frida to Gina Rodriguez.
Well, you know what? Okay, I did. Let's move on to Gina Rodriguez. So, you all know Gina Rodriguez. She's the star of Jane the Virgin, which I love. I love Jane the Virgin.
You still watch it?
I watch whatever's on Netflix. So if there, I don't think there's a new. I don't know. If
I stopped watching it the moment that I found out that Justin Baldini was Italian.
Raphael?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Because they try to paint him as like a Latinx, right? And they became this thing like, will she choose her culture or will she choose the white cop? Right?
I choose the white cop.
Me too! Even though I hate
him. I don't give a fuck. Course. Everyone was like, how dare you? I was like, what was his name? Mike? What's his name, Michael?
I don't know, girl. He was so cute and
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, he was so, so cute. And he was.
Spoiler, he died.
He did die. I was so sad when he died.
Me too, because that was the love of her life.
That was the love of her life. That's the only time I will cheer on some white man. But I was like.
Anytime Michael Cera's in a movie.
Oh, yeah. Unless we love Michael Cera.
Yeah, like, I literally, there was recently, like, a thing that I got a lot of, like, backlash from, and it was, like, what white man would you risk it all for? And I was, like, Michael Cera.
Yes, he's so cute, because he's so awkward and, like, dorky. Yeah,
that's my kind of guy.
Yes, I love Michael Cera.
I love nerds. Like, fuck. Like, talk nerdy to me, and, like, be, like, assertive, and, like... Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Okay.
Enough about
white men. Okay.
Yeah. So Gina Rodriguez.
So Gina Rodriguez she's on Jane the Virgin. She is also someone who a lot of people see representation in her, right? That she's Latina. She's Puerto Rican. She's has her own show. She's doing amazing things, right? Which is awesome for her. And however, Gina Rodriguez has some history of... I don't want to say subtle, but of anti-blackness, right? And I'm saying subtle because sometimes anti-blackness doesn't look like Gina Rodriguez is on the internet saying the N-word or talking shit about black people directly, right? When we talk about anti-blackness, that can look a lot of ways. And sometimes, obviously, we don't know that these things are anti-black, right? It doesn't excuse it, but a lot of people don't realize that it's anti-black, that it's an anti-black sentiment or narrative. But when we address it, people still, you know, want to act like they don't know what's happening or they want to tune it out. So Gina Rodriguez, let me pull up the receipts here of her tweets.
That was okay. That was a great way to introduce it because, yeah, a lot of the times, like, it's so embedded that we don't know what's happening, right? And we can't recognize it.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
So that was a really good word.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. So, for example, Gina Rodriguez... Like, a lot, she's not the only person. A lot of non-black Latinx, especially non-black Chicanxes, we always have to call you out directly.
Because that's our people.
That's our people. We got to call you out. So whenever there is black people getting representation or black people get a film or a movie or a book deal or getting something awesome, right, in representation and hypervisibility, not just non-black Latinx, but, like, all non-black people of color are like, what about us? What about our Black Panther? What about our, you know, we talked
our
about...
Our Girls Trip.
Girls Trip.
Oh, yeah, it's another thing that Gina Rodriguez did, right?
Yeah, so she said, so Perez Hilton, gross, who said, we need a Latina...
We're gonna bleep that name out. I want to keep him irrelevant.
Okay, so he had tweeted, we need a Latina version of Girls Trip with you two and others done authentically. Latinos are so underrepresented in movies. This is what he tweeted at Gina. And Gina replied, what an inspiration Girls Trip is for our community. These women are incredible, and I agree, this would be fantastic. I'm like, for our community? You're not a part of that community. But first of all, okay, so Girls Trip was... If you've never seen it, it's a movie for amazing black actresses, did great, great movie, right? But we're talking about, so Gina Rodriguez, Paris Hilton are like, what about our version? What about the Latinx version of this movie? And the same with Black Panther, Gina had tweeted, Marvel and DC are killing it in inclusion and women, but where are the Latinos? Asking for a friend. So she said this about Black Panther. She said that about Girls Trip. And she
also, yeah, and it was like, Black Latinos existed in those movies?
Number one, right? Let's talk about Tessa Thompson. Who was in Thor?
Letitia Wright.
Yes. We're talking about...
within Black Panther.
Oh, from, yes. So, from Black Panther. And we're, those are just Marvel, right? Because she brought up, like, superhero. Anyway, the point we're getting at is that first, with that statement, what you're doing or what we're doing is erasing Black and Afro-Latinx who have been in these movies, right? So how are you going to be like, where are the Latinx when they're fucking right there? Oh, Zoe Saldana also...
Oh, Zoe Saldana!
Came out in Guardians of the Galaxy. Right? So there were Black Latinx in these movies, but you don't see them as Latinx. You don't see yourself... Yeah. That's what we're talking about, right? Like, we want this specific color. Or what you're saying is you want non-Black Latinx. You want a version of Latinx that looks like you, and like erasing that Afro and Black Latinx exist, and they've been in these movies and they've been in the media. Second of all,
realized, yeah, that every Marvel movie that I've seen, I don't watch DC movies. Like, I don't fuck with them. I don't even buy their comics. I'm sorry, they're whack. but every Marvel movie that I've seen, it has been with an Afro Latinx person in it.
So Gina Rodriguez, with those statements that a lot of us make all the time, it erases Afro and Black Latinx. And there's another tweet by her. So this was back in October of last year. She posted a photo of like 15 Latinas in Hollywood, and it was called Fiercely Latinas, hashtag Latina Power. And everyone was wondering, where were the Black and Afro Latinas in this picture? The only person, I think, was Rosario Dawson, who's also not, like, a dark-skinned Black Latina. But, I mean, she was the only one worth noting there. But someone had commented, Gina, girl, te quiero, but where are the Afro Latina women? And she replied, yeah. Lots of women were invited, and these were the ones that showed. More to come, and the Latina pack will grow. And everyone...
And she said...
Sorry, everyone was like, you're lying. Like, no one believed her. That is such a cop-out. Like, oh, I invited all of them, but, like, they just didn't want to come, right? I'm like, I want to see the list of the women that didn't show up that you invited.
And so, well, along with that invitation, is something that I've mentioned before, is like, okay, let's say in a perfect world, she did invite a bunch of Afro-Latinas. Mm-hmm. Ask yourself, what was it about your space that wasn't welcoming?
Yes, right? Yes, yes.
And second of all, I think if she mentioned, like, I invited folks like Dasha Polanco and, like, I forgot who else she mentioned, but I think it was Dasha Polanco who was like, I ain't get no invitation from Gina.
Wow.
Right?
I
yeah.
Didn't know that. So there, and so I had posted, oh, another thing that Gina Rodriguez did, which ties me to that. Sorry. Everyone's like, okay, stop dragging her, please. Okay, so one more thing. So Gina Rodriguez was asked by Remezcla, there you go, said it right. I don't know what they asked her specifically, but it was about the title of the article, which I shared was, Gina Rodriguez wants to make a pre-Columbian superhero movie set in Latin America. That sounds awesome, kind of, right? When you read that. Let's read her response, though. So, this was, and I quote, I think it would be about Christopher Columbus coming over, the migration of the Spaniards, and the influence of the mixes of people in South America and in the Caribbean. That's where my superhero movies would lay, like the 1400s or 1500s. So, some keywords there. Columbus, number one. Like, why would... Okay, Christopher Columbus, my quote-unquote migration.
Migration?
That's what we're calling it now? It's like very romanticized.
Yeah, it romanticized the colonization. And I remember when folks tried to call her out on it, she was like...
Oh, she was blocking people.
Yeah, she was not only blocking people, specifically Black Latinxes.
Black, yes, that's what I was going to say. Like, not just this time, but other times that she's been called out, she's blocked a lot of Black and Afro-Latinx.
Yeah, and she was like, the time you're spending calling people out, you can be using to educate yourself. And I responded to her, like, why not both, right? Mm-hmm. Why can't I educate myself while I try to also educate you in a public scale?
Yeah, I saw that. And so I shared this on Chicanisma, and a lot of the comments were, like, into her defense. Or, again, someone that was like, I wasn't aware of... like, this sucks, right? And I'm going to keep tabs on her from now on. And so I kind of gave a little background information to the shit that she has said in the past, which we just talked about, a lot of anti-Black sentiments. And people were like, how is that anti-Black? And that's what I mean by Gina Rodriguez isn't out here saying the N-word. She's not over here talking shit about Black people, but she is erasing them. And that is anti-Black. And she erases them. And then she also tries to use Black people's hypervisibility on her, like, to turn it to non-Black Latinx.
Yeah.
Which is also very interesting because how many fucking white superhero movies have there been? Iron Man, Spider-Man, Batman,
all the Thor, mans.
All the mans. And all of a sudden there's a Black superhero movie, and this is the time that we choose to say, hey, Marvel, what about us? And again, the us being non-Black Latinx, because there are Black Latinx in those movies. So why haven't you been saying that when there's a Thor movie, when there's an Iron Man movie? Like, I don't see you all saying nothing about that. Actually, I see you all going out and supporting those movies, which is fine, whatever. Like I said, I like Thor. But if you're going, if you want this representation, which is problematic in itself, then be real about it and do it 24/7, not just when Black people have a moment for themselves. Like, just let Black people fucking have their moment. Like, why do you always have to chime in and make it about you? Because you act like fucking white people.
You do. What about us? Like, blah, blah. Annoying.
Yeah, like, I am mad when attention is not about my specific skin tone. Number C47G. That's my skin. That's how people be acting for real. Like, as long as it's not, like, it has to be my specific mestizo color. Or else I don't care about it.
Yeah, it really fucking does. And that, like, reminds me of, like, how representation, we act like it's, like, this, like, save all thing, right? We act like, oh, you know, I was in the government, or I am in this movie, so we're gonna reach liberation, right? Or we're gonna have something that matters, when in fact, like, representation doesn't have, like, material consequences. Like, it gives people hope and all this good thing, but, like, you know, when we talk about, and a lot of Latinx is like to bring up, like, oh, Black people have, like, X and Y, and they're so represented. Yes, but they're also still the most marginalized, you know, racial group, you know, in the fucking world. And it's just, like, visibility doesn't have material repercussions a lot of the time, right? So what good is all of it if we're still going to be marginalized, if we're still going to be suffering from oppression, you know, on various scales, right? What is the purpose? Right, other than, like, having our face on, like, these systems. And I think one of the ways that is most evident is how, like, Black people have been marching about, like, gun violence and, like, you know, Black Lives Matter is a huge movement, and the movement for Black Lives, right, they're huge movements that talk about gun violence, specifically from the state, right? But they are always, like, demonized, and so visibility hasn't helped them. On the other hand, we have, you know, there was a Parkland shooting in Florida, you know, just a couple weeks ago, and, you know, these little white kids, like, power to them, but they're getting a lot of good coverage, right? And it speaks to how, you know, it's never the issue at hand that matters, it's the people who are raising the issue, right? Or bring attention to it, right? So gun violence, like, it's been bad. But because it's been Black people bringing attention to it, right? And because they, even if they get a lot of visibility for it, they're still dismissed and oppressed because, you know, of the way they're racialized.
Yeah, which is something that we actually talked about in our talk at UC Davis about how anger is racialized and gendered, right? And how, you know, we were talking about how we chose bitter brown femmes, and we were talking about bitter and anger being mad, and what is acceptable anger and what is non-acceptable. And it's acceptable in white cishet men specifically, but also in white women. And we're seeing it now with these white kids. And that's not to say that they haven't received backlash, right? Because I think there was some Republican conservatives who are upset, that don't care about the kid. Like, they're upset that the kids are protesting, and they're saying that they're paid actors. And so, we're not saying that everyone is praising them, but, and, you know, that they haven't received any backlash or anything like that. or that we're also not shitting on them, but we're saying that it's important to note that we need to see the difference in who we're praising and who are we allowing access to visibly express anger, to express sadness, and who we're not, right? Because also grief, when there's Black people that are killed by state violence, they're not even given a space to grieve. They're not given a space to be mad or to be sad. It's just kind of like, get over it or move on, or they can't even grieve because they have to go right into this mode of protesting right away. And so, the Parkman kids have stated on their Twitter that they have actually been inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement. And so some of them have stated that they acknowledge that as well. And I'm glad that they've stated that. But at the same time, they're also allowed to say that. Mm. So it's, you know, that's like another thing, right? When white people say, oh, yes, I acknowledge this. But if it's only also acceptable that they said that because they're white, because Black people are also saying this. And they're still like, okay, anyway, we're not going to believe what you're saying.
Yeah. And so that's like frustrating to see happen in real time. Right? Even as, like, a non-Black person, right, of color. And so when we talk about representation and, like, a lot of the times it's non-Black people of color feeling like they are missing out on power without realizing that, like, representation doesn't have any substantial power, right? Otherwise, anti-Blackness would have ended, right? Otherwise, so many things would, you know, women's, you know, oppression would have ended, right? But it hasn't. And that's because representation can only do so much.
Yes. And the good things, and again, there are good moments within representation, right? Like, we take a look at Black Panther and how happy it's made Black people. And I see my Black friends. I went to go see it with one of my best friends, and she's a Black Latina. And I sat next to her the whole movie, and she was like, just seeing my Black friends being so happy and being like, wow, this is amazing. And there's Black women on the screen, and like, seeing that joy. Why do non-Black Latinx have to chime in and try to steal that joy from Black people? Why do we have to do that every time? Why can't we just let them be and allow them to enjoy that without trying to make it about us? So, for example, with Black Panther, and I also shared an article. It was just filled with, like, pictures of Black children seeing Black Panther and seeing, like, how happy they were too. Because for me, I think representation is important. And, like, yes, I want to see myself in the screen, and I want to feel connected and validated in one way or another. And that's not to say that only representation validates me and I need that, right? But for my son, for example, for children, I think that it's especially important, because growing up, like, I didn't see myself in media, in books, in this good, positive light, for example, right? So I think it is, like, with Coco or with Black Panther, like, I think for the children, it's very important that they're like, wow, I see myself on screen, and I can do this, and I can be a part of this too.
Yeah.
So touching back on Black Panther, I'm sure by now everyone has seen it. If you haven't, I don't know why you haven't. But yeah, people have, I think on Chicanisma asked us when we're going to talk about Black Panther, and we know it's been out for, I'm going to say it's a month or so now, right? And first we wanted to give people some time to see it, because we didn't want to right away talk about it. But also we have been trying to navigate how we wanted to talk about Black Panther, because it is a movie that was not made for us, right? Yes, we get to see it, we get to enjoy it, but at the end of the day, I was seeking critiques and reading critiques from actual Black people. And at the same time, some of the pieces that I read, they weren't even for me to even comment on, right? Engage in, which is also why I haven't really shared thoughts or pieces about it on Chicanisma either, because I'm really trying to figure out how to navigate that. But one of the things that I can say about Black Panther was that I really enjoyed it. I've seen it twice. And so the first time that I saw it, I had a lot of, I think everyone walks away with feelings and, commentary and questions and et cetera, right? And so like a lot of people online, I've noticed kind of connected, quote unquote, to the villain, right? Which was Killmonger. So what I, and I'm talking about myself too, but the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, like this person, Killmonger, like I feel like I can relate to some of the things he's saying, even though I'm not black, right? But talking about liberation and talking about what that looks like, because I'm a person that's like, if violence is needed for the revolution, then it's needed, right? And there's some people that don't agree with that sentiment. So I was like, I don't know. I was kind of feeling kind of sympathy towards him, especially in that scene with his dad and like his backstory and everything. However, I went and I started reading some pieces that were written by black people, and I hate that I didn't really think about this a lot, but it was talking specifically about black women being disposable in the movie, because all the people, the majority of people that Killmonger kills are black women, right? Like, he kills his girlfriend, who in the comic is an actual reoccurring character who's like really smart. I don't know her name. I should have pulled that up, but that was something I read in the piece, that this black American woman, who's the only like black American woman in the film, just didn't really have any lines. And then she was just so disposable, even by her boyfriend, right? And then when he is in Wakanda, like, the majority of the women that he interacts with, like, he wants to, like, when he chokes the elderly woman, when he tries to go after, when that, in that fighting scene, like, it's just all attacks on women, right? But a lot of people still overlooked all of that, or didn't even think about that, because they were like, oh, but he's doing it for the revolution.
Yeah.
And that really, like, spoke to me, that I was like, wow, I didn't even think about that. And that's my own fucked up way of thinking too, that I didn't even acknowledge that I didn't even think about black women in that narrative, right? And how it's like, who needs to be disposed of in order to get revolution? And it's always going to be women, queer people, disabled people, because it's always going to be like cishet men that are going to do anything they can to be, not for liberation, but to be white colonizers.
To be in power.
To be in power. Yes, thank you. So it's not a lot of these men that go around preaching liberation and revolution. They don't actually want liberation and revolution for everybody. They just want to be in power. And that was like what I got from that whole Killmonger narrative.
For me, it was like, you know, I've read the comic books, and I love the film. And I agree with all your critiques. And for me, it was just, like, weird not to see, you know, queer, you know, lesbian love, right? Because there's queer people in that world. Like, they're in his, you know, the Black Panther's, you know, guard, the Dora Milaje. There's queer women in it, and Roxane Gays, right, another black feminist queer writer, she wrote World of Wakanda, and most of it revolved around these queer women. And so it was odd not to see such like an easy opportunity to include queer black women in the narrative, right? Just not be a part of this moment. And for me, it was all this moment, this critique was also tainted, because a lot of white gay men in mainstream publications jumped at the chance to call black people homophobic because of this erasure. Now we can't critique it without being tainted in this way.
So I think for me that, and I've read articles about that too, so I think those were, for me, like the two prominent things that I, at least I feel that I could speak on. And again, that's because I don't want to take up space in that conversation. And if I am sharing pieces about Black Panther, I want it to be from actual black people and not, you know, white gay men or white people or just not black people in general.
So for me, like, I've shared pieces by people who I, you know, respect and follow and who are black, right? So one of the lead, for me, one of the people that I respect the most as it relates to nerdisms and race and sexuality is Charles Pulliam. You can find him on Twitter as at Charles Pulliam. He writes for i09 and Gizmodo, which is their like nerd publications. And so his work is always centered around race and specifically blackness. And so I'll link that to this. And also Clark Keisha Kent, that's an alias. She's another queer black woman who also wrote about the erasure of queer black women. As a queer black woman writing about the erasure of queer black women in Black Panther. So I'll link those in our pages just because I think they're important reads that come from queer black people, right? So also I didn't write anything about the thing other than like I loved it because I didn't want to take up space either.
Oh, one more thing though that I did want to mention real quick is this, and I'm trying to find the right word for it. So for example, everyone in the cast of Black Panther is really beautiful, right? That's, we all know that. But for me, for example, I've love Michael B. Jordan since, like, I think when I first started Instagram 2014, my first post was of Michael B. Jordan, which is really corny. But anyway, so we all know, like, what's going on. Like, everyone's like, oh, Michael B. Jordan's so hot, and all of the black men in Black Panther are so hot, right? And so when, after the movie, me and my boyfriend were talking, and I brought up something about Michael B. Jordan, and you know how everyone's like, oh, when Michael B. Jordan took off his shirt, like, everyone was like, wow, right? We see those tweets a lot. And my boyfriend kind of, like, had to call me out, kind of, because he was like, you know, I understand that, like, they're good looking, right? But he's like, I've never felt or have seen it in such a way where everyone's kind of, like, fetishizing, like, these black men and black women, too, but I think more so black men. And I was like, well, not me, because, like, you know, I've loved Michael B. Jordan. He's like, well, I'm not attacking you. I'm just saying, like, it's interesting to me to see that because it feels like just like too much where I've never seen it with like white men, right? Like in this light. And so it made me think. And after that, I started seeing like all of these like tweets and memes and these conversations about like the black men in the movie and how they're like very hypersexualized. And so like, I'm like, wow, I don't want to even comment on like how hard they are, even if I do think that anymore, because I feel like there is like this line where it is like we are fetishizing like these black men and like hypersexualizing them and the women too, right? And then I saw that too on Twitter by black people that also noticed it, of course. And so that was just something that I wanted to put out there.
Yeah, no, that's really fair. I saw the same thing happen in Moonlight, and I actually got a fight.
Yes, in Moonlight
too. I got in a fight with this white comedian who made this fucking horrible joke, quote unquote joke, about like how La La Land speaks to the man he is, and then how Moonlight speaks to the men who've been in him. And I'm just like, I like fought with him about like how that was anti-black, right? How about like, you're just like, to you, black men are just, you know, sexual tools, right? And you're dehumanizing them, right? And so that was last year, but I was just reminded of that because there's like a long history of overt sexualizing black bodies in order to dehumanize them, right?
Yes, and you know what? That you bring up Moonlight, because I actually, that happened to me too with the Moonlight. So it was actually from a white gay cishet Latino who said something like, the movie was good, but where were all the like sex scenes? But he used like derogatory like porn words in reference to black people, right? And like, as like a joke way. And so some of us, well, for someone had called him out, like, why this is wrong. So a lot of, even like a black Latina had also commented. And so a lot of us were like, hey, and I try to have like this dialogue, like, why this is wrong, delete this, pretty much. And they didn't want to, but anyway, yeah. So with Moonlight too, so I guess for those who do think that Michael B. Jordan is hot, and that is okay to think that, but just to be very cautious about that and how we talk about black men.
Yeah.
And not just black men, but also black people
in general. So it's just like, yes, people are beautiful, but check yourself, like, where the line is. Like, where are you objectifying in a way that dehumanizing, and like how race plays into this, right? And so just to be conscious of that, right, as you're navigating your attractions. And it's fine, like, it's okay to be attracted, right? And it's okay to relate to characters. We're not saying like, oh, you know, you're not black, you can't find, you know, pieces of people that speak to you, right? And X and Y, right? As a little brown nerd, like, there was countless times where, you know, black superheroes, you know, they were the thing that I related to, the people that I related to, right? And the literature that I read, right? And that is okay. And it's also good to be reflexive, which means to check your thought process as it happens, right? And so, yeah.
And that black people and black art are not, like, just for consumption all the time. But speaking on that, though, I did want to talk a little bit about Janelle Monáe's new video.
Oh, Janelle Monáe.
Yes. So I feel like before a lot of people knew who Janelle Monáe was, like, visually they knew who she was, but I felt like a lot of people didn't really listen to her music, because I've loved Janelle Monáe and I think her music is amazing, but I feel like some people just kind of like, oh yeah, I know who she is, she wears like the tux and the black and white, but not really familiar with like her music. And now she's like crossed over to acting, and I think she's a great actress too. She was in Hidden Figures, she was in Moonlight.
Oh, and Moonlight. But anyway. Yes.
Yeah, she was a Moonlight.
She's so good.
She's just amazing. And you know what? She's a Sagittarius. So, yes. So there's always been like these, I don't want to say they're rumors. I think everyone's kind of like, is Janelle Monáe gay? Or is she just, what is she? Or it doesn't matter. Right? Like, I saw this meme about that. And I think a lot of people have questioned, like, in interviews, like, are you, like, if what her sexuality is? And she's always kind of been coy about it, vague about it. And then there's rumors that she's been dating Tessa Thompson, right? And all to say that recently she released her new music video. And I showed it on Chicanisma. And if you haven't seen it, you definitely should. But it's so great. And I'm like, it's like a bi, beautiful bi anthem song video. And why I brought up Janelle Monáe in this conversation in reference to what we were just talking about Black Panther is because I know that Janelle Monáe is black. And so she speaks a lot about black power and a lot about black women and is a black woman, right? And so she's not necessarily like, I'm not black, but she's still, like, I still see myself in her, and I still feel empowered by her. And when I saw this video as a bi woman, I felt so fucking validated that, like, I had never, seen that, like, on screen by anyone, right? Because there's, like, bi white women who are celebrities, but I've never really been like, oh, okay, you know, they're, like, a representation of me, right? And even though I'm not black, like, when I saw Janelle Monáe's video, I was like, oh my god, I'm so happy right now. Like, it just felt so empowering.
And so that was really beautiful to see. I saw her in concert once, and I was just blown away. Like, I've been a fan since Anarch Android, which is her, like, first full LP. And then I went back to her EPs, and, like, I've just been blown away. If you're not familiar with her work, her albums, Electric Lady, the Anarch Android, and then Many Moons, what was the name of the first album? I forgot. Is it Metropolis?
Metropolis.
Up in this
Metropolis.
Bitch.
Metropolis.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
She's just an incredible artist. And all of her videos, like the visuals, just her aesthetic.
And they're all connected. She's just amazing. So that's something that nobody's done, is that, like, she's literally building a space opera, an epic poem in, like, the Greek term. Like, if you're not familiar what epic poem means, it's like a story told in poetry that covers a world throughout decades and sometimes centuries, right? So she's written this world, Metropolis, where black people and androids are persecuted, right? And so she's been writing about how they've survived, right, in ways that are allegorical, right, which means that she talks about issues without directly, sometimes without, like, being direct, but also being direct. And so all of this has been so beautiful to see, experience. And if her next album, Dirty Computer, finishes this story, it would literally be a 10-year project where she's taken four albums to talk about one story. And for me, that's like, that's so fucking powerful and beautiful. And I'm so excited. And when I saw the video, I was like, that's Prince and that's Michael Jackson. And like, it was, and like.
Yeah, Mad Prince.
Yes.
Yes. And also the fact that she had Tessa Thompson on the video, I feel it was also like her stating a lot without saying it. Kind of like, yes, I'm bi, yes, I'm queer, and I might be dating her, and I might not.
And it's none of our business. Whatever.
Yeah, and that's none of our business, right? Even though they wouldn't, I think everyone's rooting for, wants that to yes. be true. Even if it's not, it's still beautiful, like the friendship, relationship that they have.
Yeah, fucking, yeah, black women just like loving each other on like any level. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of that song is Make Me Feel. She released two songs. It was Make Me Feel and
there was another
Django,
one.
Django was... Jane.
Yes.
They're both dope songs, but too. I think that like my sensibilities are more pop. And so I really like mm-hmm. Make Me Feel.
Me too. Yeah. Like I heard Django Jane and I was like, oh, this is powerful too. But the Make Me Feel just, I was like, wow. Yes. Janelle Christ. Yes. And then in that scene, the scene I posted on Chigandhi's mom where there's like a guy and then there's Tessa Thompson and she's just running back and forth, like to the guy. And then she runs to Tessa Thompson, which is like the most beautiful visual of like bisexuality to me. And I'm just like, oh my God. Yes.
Yeah.
I just loved it.
And then
it.
Like they're all like it. Making out at the end. And it was just like, yeah, bisexual polyamory. Like, yes, come through queerness. Right, and that reminds me of one of yes. her lyrics from one of her skits in The Electric Lady, where the whole album is like pretends that it is a radio station and that robots yes. and black people
with Cindy,
yeah,
and she's on the run. Yeah. With, okay,
and then yeah. There was one character who calls the radio station, and all he says is like, "Robot love is queer, or android love is queer,"
mm-hmm.
and it was just like. She's been putting hints that either she is influenced or respect queerness or she is queer. And that's just so beautiful that it is ingrained in her work on such a scale. So with that said, we're going to end this episode with Janelle Monáe's Make Me Feel. Thank you for joining us. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you know, support us on Patreon. Also, we're going to start doing speaking gigs more. So if you're part of an org or, you know, a student center and want to see us like record or talk on your campus, email us at bitterbrownfams@gmail.com and we can, you know, figure something out how to show up to your school.
Yes, we love meeting you all. And for those that came out at UC Davis and saw us and took pictures with us, I'm still waiting for those pictures because we want pictures of all the people that we meet.
Yeah, it's so great to see people like
yes.
listen to us and like sometimes it feels like we're speaking to a void, and when we talk to y'all IRL, it's just like we see people who we're impacting, and so that's super dope.
Yes.
Yeah, and so we'll be putting out. We recorded the discussion, and we'll be putting out snippets of it on public, and also a longer piece for our Patreons on patreon.com/bitterbrownfams.
Yes. So thank you so much again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Baby, don't make me spell it out for you. All of the feelings that I got for you can't be explained, but I can try for you. Yeah, baby, don't make me spell it out for you. You keep on asking me the same questions. Why? And second guessing all my intentions. Should know by the way I use my compression that you got the answers to my confessions. It's like I'm powerful with a little bit of tender and emotional sexual bender. Mess me up, yeah, but no one does it better. There's nothing better. That's just the way you make me feel.
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 Uh-huh. So good, so good, so fucking real. Uh-huh. That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
That's just the way you make me feel.
You know I love it.
slow, please don't stop it. You got me right here in your jean pocket. Laying your body on a shag carpet. Ooh, you know I love it, so please don't stop it.